Brethren, it's good to see you all. It's good to be here on Sunday morning to give you this lesson and to be encouraged and exhorted by each and every person here. I want to just go ahead and hop right in because I've got some things that I need to say. The lesson is titled, if you have one of the bulletin boards, Jeremy does an amazing job of putting those together and giving us the information we need. You'll see that the title of our lesson is Nice versus Kind. And I want to start as I'm not going to say as I always do. If you don't know, I'm a school teacher. I teach kids, and a lot of times I make a lot of references to that. So, like, if I say something, I'm not trying to say that any of you are children outside of the people that are actually children. Like, that's just the references that I make sometimes. But a lot of times in school, I like to work or start with some working definitions. So, a working definition that I have for nice is pleasant, agreeable, and satisfactory. I want to put a lot of emphasis on agreeable. We'll be focusing on that a lot. A working definition for kind is affectionate and loving. And I want to put a lot of emphasis on loving. These two things can seem like synonyms. I feel like in our world today, or at least in people that I'm around, they can be kind of used interchangeably. If you say someone is nice, kind of meaning that they're kind too. Or if you're saying that they're kind, normally they also mean that they're nice. But I think as we look through the lens of the scriptures, we can see a very clear difference. If we're looking at Matthew chapter 27, Matthew 27, if you were in our Bible class this morning upstairs with Brother Rhett, he talked about Pilate and he kind of made a reference here. And I want to talk about the reference that he made. Was that me? No, that wasn't me. I'm sorry. Starting in verse 15 of Matthew chapter 27, I want to read this entire account so we can see how Pilate was nice. Starting in verse 15, it says, "Now at the feast the governor was accustomed to releasing to the multitude one prisoner, whom they had wished. And at that time they had a notorious prisoner called Barabbas. Therefore, when they had gathered together, Pilate said to them, 'Whom do you want me to release to you, Barabbas or Jesus who is called Christ?' For he knew that they handed him over because of envy." I want us to watch that. "While he was sitting on the judgment seat, his wife sent to him, saying, 'Have nothing to do with this just man, for I have suffered many things today in a dream because of him.'" I want us to watch that. "But the chief priests and elders persuaded the multitude that they should ask for Barabbas, and destroy Jesus. The governor answered and said to them, 'Which of the two do you want me to release to you?' They said, 'Barabbas.' Pilate said to them, 'What shall I do then with Jesus, who is called Christ?' They said to him, 'Let him be crucified.' Then the governor says, 'Why? What evil has he done?'" I want us to watch that. "But they cried out all the more, saying, 'Let him be crucified.' When Pilate saw that he could not prevail at all, but rather that a tumult was rising, he took water and washed his hands before the multitude, saying, 'I am innocent of the blood of this just person. You see to it.'" I want us to watch that. "And all the people answered and said, 'His blood be on us and on our children.' Then he released Barabbas to them, and when he had scourged Jesus, he delivered him to be crucified." Now each time we kind of saw an opportunity for Pilate to do the right thing, we paused. We want to make note of that. Because he had multiple opportunities, multiple occasions, signs even, that told him what the right thing to do was. He didn't do it. You know, we can see that he knew that he was innocent. It said he knew that you'll see that I get tongue-tied because, like, my mind is so much faster than my mouth, or the other way around. So we can see that he knew that they had brought him there out of envy. They were just mad. And he knew that. And so he asked, "What do you want me to do?" And then he asked again, "What do you want me to do?" His wife told him, "Don't do this, and let me tell you, that's enough for me." If Theodore Carzel says, "Don't do that thing," 9 times out of 10, I'm not going to do it. Especially if she's suffering something because of it. He knew what the right thing to do was. Now, the one that hits me the most is that he feared the people. He saw that there was going to be a riot. He saw that people were going to be upset. And so he said, "I'm not going to have anything to do with it. You see to it." Even his conscience betrayed him. You know, I'm brought to James chapter 4 and verse 17. "To him who knows the right thing to do and doesn't do it, what is it to him? Sin. He didn't do it. Brethren, Pilate was concerned with being nice. He was concerned with being agreeable, pleasant, satisfactory to the people. He had no concern for loving Jesus. His only concern was the people. His only purpose was to be nice. You know, when we're confronted with that same kind of situation in our lives, it takes us ignoring our duty to be nice. If you're thinking about times, or I want you to think about times that you've been faced with doing the right thing. You are in front of sin, and you need to confront it. Have we ever said these things? Well, I don't want to because I'm scared of what people might think. I'm scared of what people might do. I'm scared they might exclude me. We may even tell ourselves the lie that I can't. Well, I can't say that. Well, I'm not brother so-and-so. I'm not sister so-and-so. I'm not in the right position. I'm not the right person. I'm not this. I'm not that. I can't do the right thing. Brother, if we have made those decisions in the face of sin, we've been concerned with being nice instead of kind. With being agreeable and pleasant instead of being loving. And we'll find ourselves in the same place that Pilate was. And we all know, I don't think any of us agree with what Pilate did. And none of us want to be in that same position. Let's look at someone who was kind. Stephen was kind. If you go to Acts chapter 6, we're going to skip around a little bit in here, but I want to get a good context of what Stephen did and what he was talking about. Acts chapter 6, I want us to first look at verse 8. It says, "And Stephen, being or full of faith and power, did great wonders and signs among the people." He was one of seven people that were chosen by the disciples that laid hands on him so that he could go out and do the work. And we see that he was doing that work. And many times, as we see in the Bible, when someone is doing the work of God, people rise up against them. If you're looking at verse 11 through 15, we can see so many things that these people did to hinder Stephen and his work. It says, "And they secretly induced men to say, 'We have heard him speak blasphemous words against Moses and God.' And they stirred up the people, the elders and the scribes, and they came upon him and seized him and brought him to council. And they set up false witnesses and said, 'This man does not cease to speak blasphemous words against this holy place and the law. For we have heard him say that this Jesus of Nazareth will destroy this place, the customs which Moses delivered us.'"
Wild, right? Like, all I'm doing is serving God and you got to like incite people to do all this stuff. Whatever. How does Stephen respond? Is he nice? Or is he kind? What does he do in the face of this sin? I want us to skip over to chapter 7 and start looking at verse 37. Stephen goes to give this very elaborate, very detailed, very passionate... gives this very detailed account of what Moses came, or how Moses came to trust God, and what he said. So I want to pick up in verse 37, and it says, "This is that Moses who said to the children of Israel, 'The Lord your God will raise up for you a prophet like me from your brethren. Him you shall hear. This is he who was in the congregation of the wilderness with the angel who spoke to him on Mount Sinai and with our fathers, the one who received the living oracles to give to us, whom our fathers would not obey but rejected. And in their hearts they turned back to Egypt.'" I want to skip down to verse 51, where it says, "You stiff-necked and uncircumcised in heart and ears, you always resist the Holy Spirit, as your fathers did, so do you."
Now I want us to ask, does that sound pleasant? Does that sound agreeable? Would that have been satisfactory for them to hear? Should have been. Stephen was concerned with being kind, not with being nice. He was not concerned about what the agreeable thing to say was. He said the truth. He let them know exactly who it was he was speaking to, what they had done, and what that was going to cause for them. And as added measure, he built up, this is what you've always done. This is what your fathers did. You're talking about Moses, you ought to listen to him then. He was kind and not nice. What was the result? What was the result? If we look at verse 54, it says, when they heard these things, they were cut to the heart and they gnashed at him with their teeth. In verse 57, then they cried out with a loud voice, stopped up their ears, and ran at him with one accord. And they cast him out of the city and stoned him. And the witnesses laid down their clothes at the feet of a young man named Saul. Sometimes, us being kind is going to be met with, in my thing it says violence, but let me just say an unpleasant response. Something that's not always agreeable. Now, was Stephen acting out of love? Is that where that came from? I think we can see that if we go back and look at verse 59. And they stoned Stephen as he was calling on God, saying, Lord Jesus, receive my spirit. Then he knelt down and cried out with a loud voice, Lord, do not charge them with this sin. And when he had said this, he fell asleep. He was coming from love. Even as they killed him, he said, let me love these people. God, love these people. He was acting out of love. He was being kind. That wasn't about being nice. That wasn't about being agreeable, doing the pleasant thing. A lot of times when we aim to do the pleasant thing and we are met with that kind of response, what happens? Lord, get them. Strike them down. As they have done to me. We want to give back what we're given. If our goal is being nice. But when we are concerned with truth, when we're concerned with love, that's what's in us. And that's what comes out. Same as with Stephen. I hope to God I would have that same reaction. Acting out of love oftentimes brings this unpleasant reaction. Why? Because when you speak the truth, it's not always agreeable. It's not always pleasant. It's not always satisfactory. Speaking the truth takes courage. Brother Xavier read for us in 2 Timothy chapter 1. And I want to go back there. 2 Timothy 1. And just read two of the verses that he read for us. In verse 7 it says, for God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. And in verse 12, for this reason I also suffer these things. Nevertheless, I am not ashamed, for I know whom I have believed and am persuaded that he is able to keep that which I have committed to him to that day. We know those words. We sing that song. What does that mean? It means I'm not going to shy away from saying the thing that I need to say in the face of an unpleasant reaction. I'm going to speak in love. I'm going to do the thing that may not sound nice. It may not be agreeable. We saw Pilate had that fear in him. One of the quotes that we start our class with each and every day is a quote from Dune on how we have to get rid of fear. And a part of that says that fear is the little death that brings total obliteration.
Fear will kill us. Let me be a little more direct. Fear will send us to hell. Point blank, period. I don't want that for you. I would hope you don't want that for me. Brother, I need to talk about kindness concerning our body. But before I do that, I do want to start in a way that I do in class. I want you to raise your hand if you believe for a certainty that I love you. I want to see your hand if you believe that I love you. There are some visitors. You don't know me. That's fine. I still love you. Brother, let me go ahead and tell you, if you are in this building, if you are sitting in those pews or standing in the back, I love you. I'm here for you. I have an obligation to be truthful and kind to you all. That's what I have to do. Not because I have the opportunity to speak a lesson. Not because I have the opportunity to teach your wonderful children. But because I'm here and I'm a part of this body. And that means I have to be kind. Now, what I'm going to talk about, I'm going to be very passionate about. Because this affects me. I'm not attempting to be nice. I say this because I believe it's what's best for the Wildercroft Church of Christ. For that body. I'm not going to be nice and suggestive. I'm going to be kind and direct. One of the things that we get, well, not me, but people at school get blasted at, like by our CEO, is having a suggestive tone. Okay, well, do you want to stop talking? Stop talking, please? No. Stop talking, look at the board, or fail. Words I've used. One of my favorite things to do to kids. Just let them know, right? We can't be suggestive when it comes to the truth. But I want us to go to Hebrews chapter 10. Hebrews chapter 10, we're going to start reading in verse 23. It says, "Let us hold fast the confession of our hope without wavering, for he who promised is faithful. And let us consider one another in order to stir up love and good works, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, as is the manner of some, but exhorting one another, and so much the more as you see the day approaching." Brethren, if Sunday morning is the only worshiping you're doing throughout the week, you have failed in exhorting your brother. And I'm going to let that sit. I don't want us to fail. I don't want us to act in a way that is nice to each other. Any time we're gathered together is an opportunity, is an important opportunity for us to exhort one another, to build one another up, and bring each other to good works and love. I didn't make that up. That's not just Jamal talking out of his mouth. We just read it. That has to be our goal. Now, this is the part I had to practice with my wife. And if you've seen, I talk with my hands, so I'm not like trying to like do all that. I'm around a lot of people from a place that does this a lot. I'm not trying to do that. But brethren, if there are some things that are beyond our control, I'm not talking about that. But what I worry about is that some people will sit there and call things outside of their control that are not. We can't do that. We can't have that in our body. It won't work. I think that those things that are beyond, and I mean completely outside of my realm of control, are few and far between the hundred some of us that are here. Just is. Now, that might be me. So I don't want to talk about you. I want to talk about me. Obviously, I'm a teacher, so like, I don't do nothing past like 5 o'clock. If I can help it. That's not everybody's job. It's not everybody's situation. But even that, if my job were to say, you're going to be here at 7:30 every Wednesday, do you know what I would do? Do you know what kind of a teacher shortage there is right now? Whew! I can find a job. I'll be fine. More importantly, God will provide. If we are a body that cares and loves for each other, you will provide for me. And do you know what I would do if you're in that situation? I would provide for you. Because we're a unit. We're a body. We're whole. And if a part of that body doesn't show up for me, it doesn't work. And if I don't show up for a part of this body, it doesn't work. Our values are shown through our commitments. I'm going to tell you, this is the part I worried about. But our core group are those that show that commitment. They're here. Sunday morning. During worship service. For edification class. Anytime we fellowship together. Each Wednesday. Now, I don't want it to be, our job calls it water cooler talk. I'm not talking behind anybody's back. I want to say this to you. It affects me. Sometimes it breaks my heart to be here on Wednesday. Because I see the potential. I see how edified we could be. But maybe there are things beyond your control. Maybe there are things you can't help. Let's go to 1 Corinthians chapter 12. 1 Corinthians chapter 12. Starting in verse 12. For as the body is one and its many members, and has many members, and all the members of that one body being many are one body, so also is Christ. For by one Spirit we are all baptized into one body, whether Jews or Greeks, whether slaves or free, whether and all have been made to drink into one Spirit. For in fact, the body is not one member, but many. We're one. We've said that. We're a unit. We're a body. And we must work together. Verse 15. If the foot should say, because I am not a hand, I am not of the body, is it therefore not of the body? And if the ear should say, because I am not an eye, I am not of the body, is it therefore not of the body? If the whole body were an eye, where would be the hearing? If the whole were hearing, where would be the smelling? But now God has set the members, each one, in the body, just as he pleased. And if they were all one member, where would the body be? None of us are more important than the other. Not at all. And by that, brethren, we're all needed for the work.
Sometimes the Bible just says exactly what I needed to say.
Verse 20. But now indeed there are many members, yet one body. And the eye cannot say to the hand, I have no need of you. Nor again the head to the feet, I have no need of you. No, much rather, those members of the body which seem to be weaker are necessary. And those members of the body which we think to be less honorable, on these we bestow greater honor. And our unpresentable parts have greater modesty, but our presentable parts have no need. But God composed the body, having given greater honor to that part which lacks, or which lacks it, that there should be no schism in the body, but that the members should have the same care for one another. And if one member suffers, all the members suffer with it. Or if one member is honored, all the members rejoice with it. Because of our shared commitment, we share in everything. When my wife is not feeling well, I feel that from you all. I feel that you're there for me. When someone is sick, when someone's not here, we feel that. When someone shares or when someone experiences a moment of great joy, we feel that. You saw how much love, brother God? Adrian, by the way. We share in that because we're a body. We're sharing the pain as well. And when a part of that body doesn't show up for the other parts, it hurts. I want to finish off our reading here, starting in verse 27. It says, now you are the body of Christ and members individually. And God has appointed these in the church. First apostles, second prophets, third teachers. After that, miracles, then gifts of healing, helps, administrations, varieties of tongues. Are all apostles? Are all prophets? Are all teachers? Are all workers of miracles? Do all have gifts of healing? Do all speak with tongues? Do all interpret? But honestly desire the best gifts, and yet I show you a more excellent way. We all have to contribute to the working of the church. Not one of you, not one of you is here to just fill a seat, to just be a body in the pew. It's not about numbers. It's about those who are going to be here for the work. And that means we all share a part. That means we're all important. We all have work to do. Yeah, some people are elders. Some people are teachers. Some people are preachers. But we all have a job to do. Every single one of us. Now, on that, I'm done. I'm going to set that over there. But what normally happens after something like that is said, and talking to brother here in other places, what I'm going to get is excuses. I'm going to stand back there after the service is over. People are going to come up to me and say, yeah, great lesson. You know, I'm not here because of this, right? You know, I've got a reason. One, let me say this, and let me not be like mean, right? I don't care. I don't need it. It's not for me. Who do you need to say that to? God. I'm sick. I'm used to like asking a question and like people answer. I'm sorry. It's not me. And if that happens, I'm going to refer you right back to the things I said. It's probably recorded. We don't need excuses.
We need people to be here for the work. And I've seen so many people show up and step up. Men being called on by Brother Myrick so many times. And those brothers have stepped up. I appreciate your invitation every single time you give it. It's encouraging to me. It builds me up. And let me tell you, brethren, I need it. Some of y'all got kids. You know what I deal with. I need you. And I would hope that you need me. So what's the right response? It may seem, if looking at just Stephen and Jesus and most prophets, that there's not a pleasant response to truth. But I want to look at one. Let's go to Acts chapter 2. Acts chapter 2, and I want to start in verse 22. We're going to skip around just a bit, but I want to get some context of what it is Peter is saying. Acts 2 verse 22 says, "Men of Israel, hear these words. Jesus of Nazareth, a man attested by God to you by miracles, wonders, and signs which God did through him in our midst, as you yourselves also know, him being delivered by the determined purpose and foreknowledge, you have taken by lawless hands, have crucified and put to death, whom God raised up, having loosed the pains of death, because it was not possible that he should be held by it." Go down to verse 36. "Therefore let all the house of Israel know assuredly that God has made this Jesus, whom you crucified, both Lord and Christ." I want to ask you, was that pointed? Was he being like suggestive at any point? Did he say what needed to be said? And another step, to the people that it needed to be said to. One of the words that's been ringing out to me as we read Stephen's account, as we read Jesus' account, as we thinking about some of the prophets, they say you, not some people. You. He said it to the people that it needed to be said to. He said the thing that was happening. Now, I could be nice. Well, you know, I think there are some things that we can work on. And leave it at that. I'm not going to be nice to you. Why? Because I love you. These people had the right reaction to truth. And we go back to verse 37. It says, "Now when they heard this, they were cut to the heart and said to Peter and the rest of the apostles, 'Men and brethren, what shall we do?'" They didn't gnash at him with their teeth. They didn't take him out and stone him. They heard the response. They heard the call. And the response was also love. A love for the truth. A love for God. Straight up, a love for the Jesus that they know that they killed. And they said, "I'm going to change." Now, after me saying what I've said, I'm not trying to solicit a response from any of you at all. You can respond to what I've said in any way that you want to respond to it. One thing I tell the kids at school, you ain't got to do nothing that I say, ever, at all, in any sense at all. They don't like that. It's funny. You don't. It's all right there. But the response was love. The response was changing.
I don't want us to walk away thinking that if I'm kind to people, if I act out of love, they're going to take me out in the street and kill me. Now, your response may not always be pleasant. Let me tell you, I have not always had the right response to truth. My wife will tell you. That brother right there, Brandon, he does not let me get away with sin. To be quite honest, to put it plainly. And I know he loves me. Because he tells me the truth. And it's not pleasant a lot of times. But I know where that comes from. I know it comes from a place of love. It comes from a place of wanting me to win, to be better. I want that for each and every person here. And I hope if you see me out there doing any kind of thing, you won't be passive with me. You won't be nice to me. That you'll be kind. That you will show me love. Because that's what Jesus showed each and every one of us. He continues to show us that love. Raise your hand if you ever made a mistake. I know I have. You ain't got to raise your hand. I know you have too. And yet we're shown grace. And yet Jesus allows us back into his fold each and every time. He shows us love. And let me tell you, we just read, some of those words are not always kind. Don't always sound nice. Got to remember my own terminology. What's going to be our reaction? Will you be nice or will you be kind to your brethren? To yourself. Brethren, if you are not a child of God, the truth is not going to be pleasant. It's not going to be agreeable. It's not going to be satisfactory to your situation. That's what we're going to tell ourselves. Well, you know, I can't change. Because that's just not like, you know, I can't do that. You know, it's not pleasant right now. I got to be in a better place. I got to be in a different time. Is Jesus going to wait for us? No. Take the opportunity. Take the love that he shows us each and every day to change. To accept that truth takes an act of love and kindness for yourself. It takes that want to be different for yourself. For the Lord who gave himself for us to make that change. Brethren, if we are Christians, there may be times where you've been nice in situations that require your kindness. There may be times where you've aimed to be agreeable in situations that needed your love. You can change that too. And please know, like I said, I'm here for you. I'm here for you to be better. For us to be stronger Christians. You've seen me get up here and say that I haven't been. And that's not bragging. That's just a fact. Because I know if I need help, who am I bringing that to? You. Brother, if you have any need to change, if you have any need to step into the love that God has shown to us, please come forward as we stand and as we sing. Yeah.
please Him in all that I do. Yielding allegiance, glad-hearted and free. This is the pathway of blessing for me. O Jesus, loving Savior, I give myself to Thee.